has joined.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Anna.
We will begin with a Lashem Yehud. Lashem Yehud, Kushabrehu, Ishkinte, Bithilu, Urchimu, Uthilu, Uthilu, Urchimu, Leakta, Lashem, Yudhe, Bavalte, Beyehuda, Shalim, Beshem, Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Laihino, Amadonai Elohino, Elena Maseya, Dena Kunene, Elena Maseya, Dena Kunenehu. Today we study the third Aliyah of Parashat Mishpatim. The beginning verse is from Exodus chapter 22, verse 4, and it completes at verse 26. This is a total of 23 verses. The number 23 relates to the human body and the because the human body has 23 pairs of chromosomes. The number 23 relates to the Mashiach, because it is told that the Mashiach will reveal the 23rd letter of the Hebrew alphabet. There is a missing letter. Why it was concealed until the Mashiach, we really don't know. But it's obviously clear that the number 23 and the fact that there's 23 pairs of chromosomes is significant in the development of humanity. Beginning with verse 4. Ki yaver ish sadeh O Herem Bushila Et Beiro Uvier Biste Aher Metav Sadehu Umetav Karmo Yishalem. The first word, or the second word, is Yaver. It's spelled Yud Bet Ayin Resh. Later in this verse, there's a word that is written Bet Ayin Yud Resh Vav. But that word is said, actually, it's written with a hey at the end of the word, but it's pronounced with the Vav at the end of the word. There's a connection between these two words. I don't know what the word means. Ayin Yud Resh, the written word, the spoken word that has a different written word, that means city. When we get to the verse, we analyze it. It may have a different meaning to this word. We'll find that out. But these relationships, whether through gematria, or in another way, needs to be explored. I'm not sure we'll have time to or that we'll be able to, but I am mentioning it because it's significant. Verse 5. Ki tetze eshumata kotim vene kogadish o
has joined.
O hasade shalem yishalem amavir. The word is there again. Et habera, and a third time. Ki ten ish yal rehu kesef o kelim lishmor vegunav mi beit ha'ish el rehu kesef o kelim Rav Yeshalem Shanaim Im lo yimatze haganav v'nikra ba'al habayit el ha'elohim Im lo shalach yado d'mim lechet rehu al kol d'var pesha al shor al chamor al se al shalma al kol aveda asher yomar ki hu ze ad ha'elohim yavo d'var shenehem asher yarshilu Elohim Yishalem Shanaim L'Rehu Iten Ish El Rehu Lamor Oshor Ose Wekobehema Lishmor Umayet O Nishbar O Nishba Ein Roe Shavuot Adonai Yohe Wahe Adanu Yo Yohe Dawanu Heyo Tehiye Ben Shenehem Im Lo Shalach Yado Bim Lechet Rehu Vilakach Be'alav Willo Yishalem Wim Gano Viganev Meimo Yishalem Livalav In Sataro Itaref Yevihu Eid Hat Refa Lo Yishalem Ki Yishal Ishmeim Rehu Ne'we Mishbar O Met Be'alav Enimo Shalem Yishalem Im Ba'alav Imo Lo Yishalem Im sakir hu babiskaro Wakifate ish betula asher lo orasa Veshakav ima mahor yimcharena lo leisha Ima en yemaen Aviha letita lo kesef yishko kemo har habehutulot mekashefa lo techaye kol yoshkev im betema mot yumat zoveach la elohim Yacharam Bilti La Adonai Yohe Wahe Adanu Yo Yohe Dawanu Heyo Levado Beger Lo Tone Velo Tilchatenu Igerin Heitem Peretz Mitzrayim Kol almana v'yatom lo ta'anun imanei ta'ana ta'anei oto ki im tzaok yitzak elai shamoa eshma ta'akato V'hara api v'haragti Enem b'tarev v'chayu V'sheh haya amani imach lo tihye lo kenosha lo tishimun alav neshek im haravol tachbosh almat mreecha ad bo hashemesh tishivenu lo kihi kisuto. This is a word that is sounded with a vav at the end of the word, but written with a hey at the end of the word. One of the connections this makes is to unify the Zerantin with Malchut, the vav with the hey of Hashem's name. Levadai simlato leoro bameishkav v'chaya ki yitzak elai v'shamati ki chanunani. That's the end of the Hebrew reading. There seems to be a lot of static or some form of noise made, so please mute. Thank you. Now for the English translation, beginning with verse 4. If a man leads his animals into a field or a vineyard, or lets his animal loose and it eats in another's field, the best of his field or the best of his vineyard, he shall pay. So what we were discussing with the Hebrew, where you have the word bet ayin resh, or bet ayin yud resh, and then a vav in the spoken word or in the hey, the written word. This The sequence of letters, bet, ayin, resh, is being translated as a field or a vineyard. As I mentioned in another location today, that when you have the end letter of the way it is sounded and the end letter the way it is written as the vav and the hey, it's actually unifying Zerantin and Malchut, because the vav represents Zerantin in Hashem's name, and the hay, the lower hay, represents Malchut. Now, another question that we could ask about this verse is why is it telling us that if the animal gets loose and eats in another's field, if it's the best of his field or the best of his vineyard, he pays some damages. But if it's not the best, does he not pay the damages? Or is it rationalized? He doesn't pay as much damages. But it's not clear from the written Torah. Verse 5. If a fire goes forth and finds thorns, and a stack of grain or standing grain or the field is consumed, the one who ignited the fire shall surely pay. If a man gives his neighbor money or articles for safekeeping, and it is stolen from the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay twofold. Remember, if a thief is found with something in his possession, he pays twice the value. But if it's out of his possession, and they know he stole it and it's proven, he pays either four or five times the value. So this is all part of things that don't make logical sense, which all has to do with reincarnation. Verse 7, if the thief is not found, the homeowner shall approach the judges to swear that he has not laid his hand upon his neighbor's property. This is the person that was given the article to protect it for safekeeping. Now he is called the homeowner. And he is the homeowner because it says it's stolen from his home. For any sinful word, for a bull, for a donkey, for a lamb, for a garment, or any lost article, concerning which he will say that this is it, the pleas of both parties shall come to the judges. And whoever the judges declare guilty shall pay twofold to his neighbor. This is an interesting halakha. Because if someone says some piece of property belongs to them, and the other one says, no, it's mine, the judges have to decide. This is very similar to the idea in the modern age of he said, she said, where a woman says she was raped and the man said she consented. And the judge has to decide. And which, whatever they decide, that's the way it's handled. If a man gives his neighbor a donkey, a bull, a lamb, or any animal for safekeeping, and it dies, or breaks a limb, or is captured and no one sees it, the oath of the Lord shall be between the two of them. This is the oath of Hashem shall be between the two of them, provided that he did not lay his hand upon his neighbor's property, and its owner shall accept it, and he shall not pay. If someone takes an oath in the name of Hashem, it is believed by the courts. But if it is stolen from him, he shall pay its owner. If he is unwilling to take an oath in Hashem's name, then he needs to pay its owner twice the value. If it is torn apart, he shall bring witness for it. For the torn one, he shall not pay. And if a person borrows an animal from his neighbor, and it breaks a limb or dies, if its owner is not with him, he shall surely pay. See, all of these halachot, all of these laws, are not logical in the way they're applied in different situations, which is clearly indicative that they're written for such situations having to do with reincarnation. And if a person borrows an animal from his neighbor and it breaks a limb or dies, if its owner is not with him, he shall surely pay. That's the verse I just read twice. Verse 14, if the owner is with him, he shall not pay. If it is a hired animal, it has come for its hire. If a man seduces a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall provide her with a marriage contract as a wife. If her father refuses to give her to him, He shall weigh out money according to the dowry of the virgins. You shall not allow a sorceress to live. The relationship between these two verses, it's talking about the marriage contract to somebody who seduced a virgin. It's talking about the father doesn't have to give the woman to the man to be married, but he must pay the dowry right anyways. Now, what is the dowry of the virgins? We don't know. And then immediately after that, it says the sorceress should not live. What about a sorcerer? But even not asking that question, what's the relationship between the virgin that's seduced and a sorceress? Because we have teachings from the Torah and then within the Talmud and the Zohar that the relationships between one verse and the next verse or the previous verse all are meant to teach various things. Verse 18, whoever lies carnally with an animal shall surely be put to death. He who slaughters a sacrifice to the Elohim shall be destroyed, except if it is to Hashem alone. And you shall not mistreat a stranger, nor shall you oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Do you remember being in Egypt? If you can't remember it, why are you being told not to mistreat the stranger, which is also the convert? And it's from this halakha that the rabbis extrapolated the idea that you do not bring up a convert's past. You don't mention that they converted. If they bring it up, it's okay. It's their choice. But it's not your choice to bring it up, because it might be embarrassing to them. It might make them feel badly about what they did before. Verse 21, you shall not oppress any widow or orphan. If you oppress him, beware, for if he cries out to Hashem, to me, I will surely hear his cry. My wrath will be kindled, and I will slay you with the sword, and your wives will be widows, and your children orphans. The definition of an orphan is someone whose parents have died. That's not the definition of an orphan in the Western world. 24. When you lend money to my people, to the poor person with you, you shall not behave toward him as a lender. You shall not impose interest upon him. Does money have value over time? Does money always grow? No, but interest is always there. This is the reason. Money doesn't necessarily grow, but if you pay interest, the money is always growing. If you take your neighbor's garment as security until sunset, you shall return it to him. If somebody needs to give you his coat as security for the loan, It only can be until sunset because he will need his coat to protect him from the cold. Because if he needs to borrow from you and you ask for the security of the coat, it's clear that he may not have a place to live. For it is his only covering, it is his garment for his skin. With what shall he lie? And it shall be that if he cries out to me, I will hear, because I am gracious. That's the end of the reading. We're out of time, but I'm going to extend it a few minutes. I hope you don't mind. And we will take the 19th verse, 19th paragraph in chapter 4 of Perek Shirah. O Rev, O Mer, Miyakin, La O Rev, Tzedoki, La Dav, El Yishaweu. This is a verse from Job. It's interesting to me that the raven, let me translate the verse for us. The raven is saying, who prepares food for the raven when his young ones cry out to Hashem? Except the verse doesn't say Hashem. It says El. When his young ones cry out to El. What I started to say, what's interesting to me is raven is in the singular. The stork is in the plural. That's the previous verse. Some of the verses are in plural and some of the verses are in singular. Why is the difference? And you'll understand that the difference comes from the bird that's being discussed. The raven is a bird that does not really pair and remain paired. The raven is not a bird that creates families. But it's talking about his children. But it's not talking about the idea of the bird being with the other bird. Yet they are both needed to create the children. The nature of the raven is to be solitary. The nature of the stork is to be in a family unit. Does anybody have any questions? We have three more classes today. An 11 o'clock class that is continuing study of the book of Joshua. 4:30, a deep study class. 7 p.m. Maybe it should be the Tikkuni Zohar class. But I may include a teaching from the Ari about the upcoming holiday of Purim. I haven't really decided. I also should announce that today is the second dose of the vaccine that I'm receiving. And the way it's being organized in this building is I will get a phone call and then I must go. Anytime between noon and 5 o'clock, which is 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the central time zone. So if I have to leave the class, please understand. But I do plan to continue the classes once I get installed. Are there any questions? Shalom Gadol to everyone.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you, Hanok.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Hanok. Have a good day.
You too.
Shalom.